Welcome. Are you ready to take a journey with me into knowledge, enlightenment, and discovery? Then let's journey again together. This is your host, Rebecca Jernigan, and you're listening to Journeys with Rebecca.
Hi there, and welcome to the show. I am so excited and happy to be here with you on the BBS Radio. You know, if it's not mainstream, it's on BBS Radio, and I'm certainly not mainstream, so this is a great relationship. Just remember, you can hear me 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Tuesdays and Wednesdays, right here on BBS Radio. Now, for those of you who don't know me, I know that you're going to love all of the great guests I have on the Journeys with Rebecca radio show. And as a reminder, Journeys with Rebecca is sponsored by Fate Magazine. So please visit my website, journeyswithrebecca.com, to find out more about Fate Magazine. By the way, that is my official website. There you can find all the latest Journeys news, guest links, upcoming shows, and much more. That's journeyswithrebecca.com. Now, today's guest, Walter Cruttenden, is going to be no exception to all of the great guests that I've had in the past. Today, we're going to be talking about his book, The Lost Star of Myth and Legend. As an executive director of the Binary Research Institute, he spends much of his time researching the celestial mechanics of the precession of the equinox, as well as ancient structures, myth, and folklore related to this phenomena. He is the writer, producer of The Great Year, a PBS broadcast documentary film that explores evidence of astronomical cycles of time known to cultures throughout the ancient world. You're not going to want to miss this one, so stay tuned and we'll be right back with more of Journeys with Rebecca and my guest, Walter Cruttenden.
Schedule your private psychic reading with Rebecca, a truly gifted intuitive and clairvoyant, and the host of Journeys with Rebecca radio show. Call 1-888-958-2768. That's 1-888-958-2768. Where will your life's journey take you?
More than talk, it's entertaining insight and discoveries. You're listening to Journeys with Rebecca.
Listening to Journeys with Rebecca, and boy, oh boy, oh boy, do I have a special guest today. We have with us today Walter Cruttenden. His latest book, Lost Star of Myth and Time. Let's just get right to it. Welcome to the show, Walter. I'm so happy to have you here today with us.
Pleasure to be here with you, Rebecca.
Well, you know, I was telling you before we went on air today that, you know, I had an opportunity to look through the book and also to view the DVD. Absolutely astounding stuff. Absolutely. And, you know, stuff just seems like such a, there's just so much going on. Just so much going on. But I think what I'd like to do is maybe let's define what the Lost Star is, if you don't mind, Walter, and then we'll kind of get into how you got into all of this, and I'm just going to kind of let you roll with it, and then I'm going to certainly interrupt and ask questions as we go along, if that's okay with you.
It sounds great.
All right.
Well, you know, ancient cultures all around the world, through their myth and folklore, spoke of a vast cycle of time with a golden age at one end and a dark age at the other. And there's probably, according to Giorgio Santayana, he was the professor of history at MIT who wrote a book on this, Hamlet's Mill, there's probably over 200 myths that have to do with this cyclical view of history and this golden age, dark age. And yet, we were brought up, you know, taught in school that it's just a fairy tale. And when I was a little boy, I was always interested in ancient cultures and noticed that many of your very ancient cultures like Sumer, Akkad, Babylonia, they all seem to decline. Same thing happened in ancient Egypt, of course. People are very familiar with that, where, you know, 4,000 years ago it seemed to be at its height, and then it went back almost to a nomadic society by the Dark Ages. And this, it goes on and on in India, Mesoamerica, elsewhere, the Mediterranean cultures. And, you know, in the West, we recognize that when Rome fell, we had this Dark Age. and then after that a Renaissance. So it looked to me like this cycle was real, what I was seeing and reading history and the archaeological record. And yet in school they taught me that, hey, evolution is linear, anything that came before us is more primitive, and the ancients really didn't know much.
Yeah, I had the same school.
I know, and I just couldn't believe it. And so this became a passion of mine to really try to study history, study ancient cultures, and specifically to try to figure out what might cause this cycle, if indeed it's real.
Well, and let me interrupt just a second
Okay.
here for you, because you began the program with talking about the 24,000-year cycle, which I think is very, very prevalent as we get later on down in this conversation that we're having. And the term that I use is that everything in the universe, if you will, is rhythmic or cyclic. For me, it feels like a rhythm. So I find this is just fascinating stuff when we start looking, and I hope that people are out there can really kind of grasp the I guess you would want to call it the timing that you're beginning to go into with all of this. Sorry
yes.
to interrupt there
it's
for you.
You're right. It's a vast cycle. So you were very familiar with the daily cycle, night and day, and that's caused by the spinning motion of the Earth. And then, of course, there's the yearly cycle of the seasons, and that's caused by another celestial motion, the Earth on a slight tilt going around the sun. And what the ancients are telling us is that there's a third motion. It's called the precession of the equinox, and that's the unique thing about all these myths and folklores, how they all talk about the movement of the stars. They're referring to precession. But this third motion takes so long that we barely notice the cycle. We do notice, if we read history carefully, that all these great civilizations decline, and we do notice more recently that everything seems to be advancing now at a pretty rapid pace. But we just kind of call the most recent advance evolution, and we kind of ignore the old decline. And what the ancients would tell us, and what astronomy is beginning to confirm, is that it appears that our solar system, our sun, is going around another star. And of course it takes the planets with it. And as it does so, it causes a third celestial motion. And this indirectly produces the rise and fall of the ages. And we can get into the mechanism and all that. But you had asked about the lost star, and many cultures talked about, you know, this cycle and what causes it, and they often mention that there's another star. And so it turns out that about 50 to 60% of all the stars out there, everyone you see in the night sky, is in a binary relationship or a multiple star relationship. In other words, stars have partners just as much or more than people do. And they're gravitationally bound, and they go around each other. And so, you know, we've sort of long thought our sun was just totally by itself. And the more and more we look at this question, the more we are finding evidence that our solar system is curving through space. And so now we're trying to figure out, okay, what star is it curving around? And that's the name of the book, Lost Star of Myth and Time.
Okay, so are you saying that there is evidence then out there of this lost star? I mean, and I'm going to say via earthbound, as far as whatever ancient text or writings or, you know, things that have been found, or is this a theory, or has there been actual sightings or something that would tell you that there is this lost star? And I have to tell you, I believe exactly what you're saying. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, well, this is really what the whole book is about, the growing evidence. And so I think it's probably just a few years away, maybe 5 or 7 years, from the realization that we are going around this other star. And I'm talking to some of the top astronomers, astrophysicists in the world on this, and I'm not alone. Richard Muller at UC Berkeley has said it appears our solar system is in a binary relationship. Whitmire and Matisse down at the University of Louisiana has said there must be a 10th planet or a dark dwarf or something like this. And so it seems like there's basically two scenarios for this other star that affects history. One is that the solar system, the universe, operates purely by Newtonian dynamics, and therefore this other star has to be a dark star because it must be fairly close, and yet we don't see it. So some people are on the path of trying to determine if there's a faint red dwarf maybe towards the galactic center that we haven't yet detected, or possibly a brown dwarf, which is even harder to detect. And we're just about at the point where we're getting the instruments that can do this and where we're searching enough of the sky to find the candidates. So that's one scenario.
Well, now, let's go back into history just a little bit. I'm kind of stuck on this 24,000-year cycle thing, because there's been people that, one of them is Sitchin, and Zechariah Sitchin, who talks about it, and there's people that have brought up the planet X or Nibiru or whatever you want to call it, saying that every 24,000 years it comes back around. I'm sure you're familiar with all that, right?
Oh, very familiar.
So there's like this huge tie-in of myth or ancient knowledge, whatever I prefer to call ancient knowledge. I believe in all myths, there's truth to it. That would also have to go with the cyclic nature or the rhythmic nature of things. And maybe that's the reason why we haven't seen it yet, because it's not in our, as you said, viewpoint, in a sense.
Right. There's a lot of people that have written about bits and pieces of this thing, including Zachariah Sitchin that you mentioned. He's come across a lot of this myth and folklore and the cuneiform text, and the word Nibiru or Marduk they use for this other celestial object. Now, based on some of the interpretation, and remember, the cuneiform texts are probably close to 5,000 years old, so it's very difficult for us to understand what they're meaning. But he has assumed that they're talking about a planet because they use the word crossover. And all our study leads us to believe it's not a planet. It's actually a star. And it's a star that's that causes precession. And so I'll get into the precession of the equinox just briefly so people can understand this.
Okay, great.
Monday was the vernal equinox, the spring equinox, and that's the day of the year when, you know, you have an equal amount of light and darkness. And on that day, the ancients would take measurements, and they'd look out due east at sunrise, and they would see a constellation there. And so if you looked out due east on the equinox, say, 4,000 years ago, you would have seen Aries. And about 2,000 years ago, Pisces would have just been coming into view. And now the background constellation that's just starting to come into view is Aquarius. And astronomers view this, but it's also used in astrology. That's why they say we're at the dawning of the age of Aquarius.
Right.
And the physics theory on this is that the Earth must wobble. And that's why even though we've gone around the sun once, we see slightly different stars. So they say the Earth is wobbling. We have done exhaustive studies on this with mathematicians and astrophysicists here at the Binary Research Institute, and find that it's not the Earth wobbling that causes this, what we see as the precession, the equinox, a different constellation at sunrise over long periods of time. We think it's actually the whole solar system curving through space, which gives us this view.
I think that's just awesome, by the way. When I was watching your DVD and they were showing that, I was like, oh, that just makes so much sense. It just seemed to be logical.
It almost takes animation to get the point across.
It sincerely does. It was fabulous, by the way.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, and having James Earl Jones narrate it was a real treat.
He is awesome.
Too. But anyway, so this, we think it's the solar system curving through space, and we've got some angular momentum studies, some lunar rotation studies, all kind of technical stuff, but the evidence has just been building pretty strongly for the last 5 years. And so the larger theory then is, well, why the heck would this cause a change in consciousness or a change in civilization? And there's a guy we've been working with, his name is John Daring, a physicist at Cerecorp, and he's sort of helped to clarify some of these ancient theories, and that is that all stellar objects, including our sun, are huge generators of electromagnetic energy. So the sun, for example, we see the just this thin portion of the electromagnetic spectrum called visible light, but we know that it includes infrared, ultraviolet, X-rays, gamma rays, radio waves, all this other, all these other electromagnetic waves. Well, and they affect life. I mean, you know, when we turn towards the sun in the morning, we literally move from subconscious to conscious, photosynthesis starts working, the planet becomes active, and then at night when we turn away, biological systems are pretty much attuned to shut down. Same thing with the seasons. Well, if we're going around another star and getting closer to and farther from another star, then you'd have this completely another field starting to affect Earth. But this one, instead of working just on a daily basis or yearly basis, is working on a very long-term basis. And we think it's literally causing the rise and fall of civilization over very long periods of time.
Well, you know, it makes total sense. Let's talk about, you know, and this is, pardon me, this is one of the things that I have a lady that comes on that does astrology for me. And we've talked about how the moon affects us. I mean, you know, we've got physical scientific proof of what the moon does to different growing phases, what it does to emotions, et cetera, and so forth. I mean, it's a proven fact. So if we know that the moon affects us, think about what the whole solar system is doing. And it's really, in science, in the world, has really done a disfavor to those who did astrology and / astronomy, because they tried to separate the two out, and really they shouldn't be separated out, in my opinion.
Well, you're right. At one time, they were all the same thing.
Right.
Same with alchemy and chemistry, of course.
Right.
But I think this is, you know, just sort of the pattern we're going through. In the Dark Ages, we forgot all this stuff. And now what are we finding? We're realizing that, you know, all matter is made of very subtle particles, and even the particles appear to be made of energy. And so there's a wonderful bit of research that's been done now on how life might be affected by electromagnetic waves. And probably the best papers that I've seen, Rebecca, come from Valerie Hunt. She was a professor of physiology at UCLA, and she did an amazing thing. She took some subjects and put them in the physics department in a room there called the Mu Room. And this is a room that is insulated from the ambient electromagnetic atmosphere that is moving through us right now, that's moving through us all the time. And then she gave people tests to do. Well, not only did they perform poorly on the tests, but some of the subjects felt threatened, and some even broke down and cried. And so, you know, she ended up taking them out of there. And then when she completely restored the electromagnetic, the ambient atmosphere, plus jacked it up a little bit with I believe it was negative ions. I don't have my papers right here, but then people reported the opposite effect, that they felt good, a sense of well-being, did a little bit better on the tests. And so we know that electromagnetic fields affect not only our magnetosphere and our ionosphere, but we now know that it affects consciousness or the way we feel and view the world. And so we think that's happening then on a very large scale with the whole sun carrying the Earth in and out of another star's electromagnetic field on a very long-term basis. And this slowly, you know, affects all life on Earth.
Well, and, you know, that's just like a perfect synchronicity, what you're saying there. I mean, and as a society, most of us have become very, very desensitized because of the extraordinarily high amounts of noise and noise pollution and all the things that go around us that we just forget to stop and feel and sense those subtle energies. And they do affect us whether we know they are or aware of it or not. So it makes like total perfect sense.
Absolutely. And not only is the Earth's magnetic field, the magnetosphere affecting us and natural waves, but you're right, there's plenty of man-made waves from TV to radios to cell phones, and that's why we can pick these things up, because they're going through us at this very moment, although we're not clear on exactly how they affect us.
And I think that's something that's really going to take a lot more studies before people really get that figured out. I really do, because
no
I think everybody reacts a little differently to it.
No doubt about it.
And we are just about out of time on this segment, so when we come back, though, you guys don't go away. When we come back, Walter, I've got a whole bunch more questions for you. You guys do not go anywhere. We're here with Walter Cruttenden talking about the lost star of myth and time, and we will be right back.
Fate Magazine, they recognize the impossible can be possible. We explore the unknown so that it can be known. From personal accounts of ghosts and UFOs to scientific examination of psychic phenomena and earth mysteries, Fate's main purpose continues to be honest reporting and open discussion of the strange and the unknown. So log on to www.fatemag.com or call 1-800-728-2730.
Check out Rebecca's website for the latest Journeys news and more. Log on to www.journeyswithrebecca.com.
Welcome back, and you're listening to Journeys with Rebecca. Today we are here with Walter Cruttenden and talking about the lost star of myth and time, as well as many other things. During the break, Walter, we were talking about some of the things that you may, we talked about some of the aspects of what's going on. And now we decided that what we wanted to do is kind of gear the whole conversation toward the ancients and their knowledge and that kind of thing. And I'm just cannot wait for you to get started on it.
Okay. Well, I tend to bring up the science first because I think that remembering the cycle is so important, that's going to take, you know, good scientific study to get people to understand that we are going around this other star and that it can affect us. But you're right, Rebecca, what the ancients said about it is just beautiful. And really, so many ancient cultures talk about it, but I think the Greeks have some of the most beautiful language. Hesiod and Eratos and some of the other Greeks broke this cycle into ages, which Plato called the Great Year, made up of the iron, bronze, silver, and golden age. So that's on the way up, and then on the way down we go from golden, silver, bronze, and back to iron. And they said that the changes that the Earth goes through is so dramatic, it's just difficult to comprehend. And so Hesiod talks about how in the golden age, things are so beautiful and man lives in tune with nature, and many cultures talk about how man lives to be a very long time in the Golden Age. Bible makes reference to this. The Vedic texts make reference to this. A matter of fact, if you look at the Chinese or Egyptian records, the Egyptian king lists or the Chinese dynastic lists, when you go back in time, well past the last dark age, you see that you have these very long periods of time where people are not just ruling for 20 or 30 or 40 years, but for 100, 200, or 300 years. And it's either a great conspiracy, because all the records of the world seem to show this, or it's real. In the higher ages, people are living very, very long lifetimes, versus in the dark age, you know, what was the average lifespan then? Maybe 40.
Right, and that was old.
Lucky.
40
yeah.
was old. And
you know, I had the president of the head of R&D for Johnson & Johnson in my office, and we were talking about medical technology, and he was commenting that, you know, in my grandfather's day, the average life expectancy was about 50 years old. And he said, now, you know, close to 80, 85 for you, and your kids, it'll probably be 120, 130 years old, your grandkids. And so just in our lifetimes, we're seeing quite an expansion in the age. So the rough equivalence is in the lowest age, the iron man lives to be about 100, the next age 200, the silver age 300, and the golden age 400 years. But the character of the ages is probably the most subtle and beautiful thing. Eratos has this poem where he says that virtue plays openly with man in the golden age. She grows weary in the silver and flees in the bronze, not to be seen in the iron.
Wow.
And the Iron Age is considered the material age, the age of man. We've just come out of that with the Renaissance. The age we're currently in now, or just creeping into, is the Bronze Age, the age of the hero, when man becomes aware of finer forces. And sure enough, you know, just a few hundred years ago, electricity, magnetism was discovered. We realized everything is made of smaller particles. In the next age, it's supposed to be the mental age, the age of the demigods, where things like levitation, clairvoyance, some of these things that we believe are just myth are supposed to be very prevalent around the earth. And it's hard for us to understand this. You know, if you think just 100 years ago, who would have thought that we could do heart transplants and fly to the moon, or that we'd all carry around devices where we could instantly talk to somebody on the other side of the world? It would have been considered magic.
You know, exactly. I was talking to somebody about that just the other day, Walter, about, you know, it used to be where I was telling this gal, and I said, you know, I grew up when there was a party line for our phones. You shared a phone line, and it was a big deal if you had a phone in your house. You know.
Right, and now everybody's got one, and you can exchange pictures and video.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. I love it, though.
Yeah, and so if that's the type of changes that have occurred in just 100 years, imagine what the changes that might come in 1,000 or 5,000 years. And what the ancients would tell us, though, is that this fascination with technology and these changes are simply a reflection of our change in consciousness. They're sort of a proxy. And this fascination with gadgets doesn't really last that long. That we realize we have tremendous power within ourselves and get back to living in tune with nature and find that everything is there already. And so, yeah, all these hints about the higher ages are just incredibly, incredibly beautiful.
Well, and when I was watching the video, the DVD that you guys sent to me, it talks, and I love the, by the way, I like the things that come up, and you have little sayings from Plato and some other ones. That's just, was wonderful. But what I want to talk to you about now is one of the, when you first started bringing up about the fact that, you know, people lived longer, you know, they reigned for 100, 200 years. And I used to think that was weird. You read history and you're going, well, how come we don't live that long now? You know, I mean, they used to live longer then, and supposedly they didn't have what was available to them then as opposed to what we do now. And that was a huge, huge question for me. It was one of my pondering things. Even as a young child, I thought about that. I was like, well, that just doesn't make any sense. How come people didn't, you know, how come we're not living 200 years or whatever the case may be?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. You know, in the Dark Ages, when we used so little of our brain, and, you know, even scientists today will say we only use, less than a quarter of our brain.
Right. Scary thought.
Then it has a ripple effect. We don't make good decisions. We eat poor foods. We're not living in tune with nature. And in the higher ages, for example, by the end of this age, we're supposed to be using 50% and 75% and the silver and 100%.
So how long are these going to last?
Well, as you mentioned, this whole cycle is about 24,000 years, and there's 12,000 years ascending for four ages and then 12,000 years descending four ages. And then each of the ages, according to the Hindu texts, is sort of a 1-2-3-4 ratio. So the lowest age is the shortest, about 1,200 years. The next one's 2,400 years. The next one, 3,600, and then the golden, 4,800. And then you go back down on the same scale. The Hindus, the Vedic texts, they really detail this whole thing out and talk about the character of the ages quite explicitly. By the way, this so it takes 24,000 years, 12,000 ascending, 12,000 descending. We think that's where our notion of the clock or time came from. Scientists today, archaeologists, historians can trace the clock back to ancient Egypt or Mesopotamia. But really no farther than that, because that's as far as the records go. But they have, 12 hours of AM, 12 hours of PM in a 24-hour context. So it's like a little microcosm. We've all been wearing the great year on our watches all this time.
Yeah, actually I read, and I don't remember, it's been years and years ago, somebody did a book on that about our mathematics. Even our own mathematical system is really not based on 10, but rather 12, and broke down all of the different, and one of them was the clock was the big thing, you know, about the 12 and the 12 and the 24 hours, and there was all kinds of relationships to the 12 and the 24 out in the universe. And I thought that was pretty interesting, especially seems how we've brought this 24,000 time period up, and it's broken down into all these increments, and they're basically divisions of 12 or 24 or whatever you want to call it. So
yes.
I think there's some relevance there.
I think so. You know, we use the 10 based system because it's pretty simple and we're very used to it. But if we were using a decimal system such as the Babylonians, a 6 based or 60 based system, which is, you know, essentially is in pairs, it gives you the 12 you're referring to. If you're used to it, it works just as well. As a matter of fact, it works better for geometry.
I'm glad you brought that up too.
And sacred geometry, of course, is one of these ancient sciences that was lost that now just seems to be coming back again.
And I don't think that, I don't think any of these are accidents, all these discoveries that we're making, obviously. I mean, you know, they've actually found some cities now that have been buried for, you know, 10,000 years that, you know, were quite, you know, quite, fascinating. I mean, they were way advanced of what they thought. I mean, and one of the things that I predicted years ago is I said they're going to start finding things and they're going to realize that this earth is not what they thought it was, that we've been a civilizations in the past that have had these technologies and ancient knowledges that are going to be coming to the surface. And, you know, some of that is, it's just like some of the things that have been built and they don't use mortar, but yet they still stand up, you know, no cement or anything. They can't figure out how those blocks got there and how they stay there without having anything to cement it together.
Well, that's right. There's some of the, construction of the ancient megalithic structures is amazing, not just in the way it's put together without mortar. You can see this in South America. Some of these pieces, they're almost machined. But all the alignments, I saw a study on this. Prior to about the year 1500 BC, virtually everything, tombs, cairns, hinges like Stonehenge, megalithic structures are aligned with either the equinoxes or the solstices, and many of them mirror heavenly patterns, constellations and that sort of thing. Obviously the well-known one is the three pyramids on Giza Plateau that seems to mirror the three stars in Orion's belt. But you find this throughout the world. For example, ancient Heliopolis seems to mirror the constellation of Aries, or the round towers in Ireland, which were built on very old structures, seem to mirror the constellations of the Northern Hemisphere.
And there is, matter of fact, it wasn't too long ago that I was watching, I think it was the Discovery Channel, where they had done a whole program on this, Walter, where they had sites that most people weren't familiar with all over the world. And they have all said the same thing. They've all been aligned with the movements of the celestial bodies. And that's why I think it's important that we bring this information out for people to be aware that the movements of the planets or our solar system moving or the combination thereof is something that people really need to pay attention to, because it does allow you to be more aligned with the energies of the earth. It allows you to, you know, it helps your own body. I mean, if you're someplace and it doesn't feel comfortable, there's something going on. You've got to be attuned to those things. And I think this knowledge, this information that people are bringing forward is not just because it's fascinating, because it's also helpful.
Yes. Well, yeah, when your ancient cities are built that way, and for example, a line, say some walls are aligned with the equinox due east. And so, you know, you can almost subconsciously tell what time it is.
Yes.
It's very satisfying. They've been finding more and more things. Corral, Peru, that goes back about 4,700 years, these six roughly 70-foot pyramids they found on the west coast of Peru. And what's interesting is that predates the Giza pyramids by about 400 years, which are considered to be about 4,300 years old. And that kind of caused a rewrite of history in that in the very, you know, early textbooks, I was taught that this theory that man came out of Africa, and that's why we find the cradle of civilization around Mesopotamia and Egypt. And now if we're finding pyramids in Peru that are even older, it sort of causes a whole rewrite there.
Unfortunately, it'll be a while before the history books are rewritten. There's a lot of things they need to rewrite in them, and that's just one of them, that's for sure. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
An interesting thing is I wanted to bring this up before I forgot about it. A few years back, I was watching a study on the city of Seattle, Washington, of all places, and their entire city is built on ley lines.
Oh, you know, I've read a little something about that. I've not studied the subject, and you know, ley lines, there are some earth energies that some people seem to be able to detect, but it's a very, you know,
it actually looks like a graph.
Science right now.
Yeah, it actually looks like a graph, but I think, you know, it talks also about the, I guess, the orientation of it as far as its directions and how it runs, which my feeling is that it's all tied into everything. You know, I believe everything is ultimately interconnected. We're not separate from anything. And just that, and I'm sure if they did some other studies on some other cities or places that they would find similar thought processes, that they would find those same types of discoveries. And if they took it a step further, my belief is that they would actually find that it aligns with something going on in the astronomy aspect of it.
It could well be. We do know that Washington and Chicago were laid out to certain specific plans. Chicago based somewhat on Swedenborg's ideas, and Washington, you know, seems to have some Freemason tinges in it there. But I think this was very common in ancient cultures, and, you know, perhaps we'll understand someday why they did this, and it probably is for some purpose. They wouldn't just do it for no reason.
No, and it's just like we were talking about the pyramids of Peru and Egypt, and the ones they've also found in China and Japan, all of those, and all the henges, they're all geared towards the movement of the stars in the heavens.
It appears to be, yeah.
Yeah.
People don't realize how prevalent these are. For example, Stonehenge, stone circle, we're familiar with that one because it's in so many photographs, but did you know that there's over 500 henges just in Britain? And megalithic structures around the world, they're on every continent that we've found except the Antarctica so far. And who knows, maybe when we scrape away the ice someday, we'll find there's more there. But and Korea, I was just reading this the other day, has the most number of megalithics per square mile.
I didn't know that about Korea.
Yeah, megalithic stones. And, you know, slowly but surely the farmers are taking them up to move aside and things like this. But,
oh, my gosh. That's truly interesting. I mean, you know, it was worldwide. I guess that's the thing that we all need to understand. It was worldwide, that the entire world was populated long before we realized it was populated all over the world.
Right.
So, and Walter, we're going to have to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to kind of wrap it up, and I'm going to let people know where they can get your book and your DVD, and we'll get some final thoughts on this. You guys, don't go away. We'll be right back with more of Walter Crittenden and Journeys with Rebecca. Hi, this is Rebecca. You know, it's easy to keep up with all the latest Journeys news. My upcoming guest, just sign up to receive the Journeys newsletter. It's free, and you will never receive any junk mail. Your email is never sold or distributed. So keep up to date the easy way. Just log on to my website, journeyswithrebecca.com, and at the bottom of the main page, you'll see the box. Type in your email address, and you're done. And once a week or so, you'll receive all the latest Journeys news.
Email Rebecca with your comments to mailbag@journeyswithrebecca.com. You're listening to Journeys with Rebecca.
Welcome back, and you're listening to Journeys with Rebecca. We are here talking to Walter Crittenden. We've been talking about Lost Star of Myth and Time. We've gotten into an awful lot of information here, Walter, and I know that you have some things that you kind of want to share with the audience, so I'm going to sit back and let you run with it, and we'll go from there. And before we leave here today, though, we'll let everyone know how to get a hold of your books and your DVD and anything else so that they know where to get all this for you, from
okay,
you.
Okay, Rebecca.
Great.
Well, maybe just to recap here, so we're working on this theory at the Binary Research Institute that our solar system is in a companion star relationship with another star, as most stars are out there, and that when we orbit this other star, it takes us into and out of another stellar field that indirectly affects life on Earth. It affects our ionosphere, our magnetosphere, and consciousness. And the ancients say that it causes this great cycle, this great year, as Plato called it, with dark ages and golden ages. And this used to be the prevalent theory of history, this belief in this cycle, prior to the biblical age. And then at least in the West, replaced this cyclical thought with the idea that, you know, everything was formed about 6,000 years ago, and then you had a flood, and things are fairly new. And then that lasted up until about the 1800s, when Spencer and Darwin came along and said, no, it's not cyclical, it's not biblical, it's strictly linear, this evolutionary theory. And but today now, more and more people are going back to the cyclical idea because we're finding all these artifacts. For example, one is the Antikythera device. This is something that was found off the Isle of Antikythera in the Aegean Sea by sponge divers about 100 years ago. And they know that it dates to about 80 BC because this big green glob of stuff was encrusted with amphora and jewelry and everything that matches this period of about 80 BC and the ship itself. And it just sat in the museum until a few years ago somebody happened to drop it. And what came out of it sort of shocked the world. About 32 different gears splayed out of this thing. And so a fellow by the name of Price has tried his best to rebuild it. And it turns out that it's some sort of ancient chronometer, something to compute the movement of the stars and the heavens. And again, it totally changes our paradigm, because we were taught that gears weren't developed, complex gears especially, until the great clockmaking era, 1200-1400. And differential gears didn't come along until the Industrial Revolution, about 1800. And so when you find a device with 32 precision gears, including one that appears to be a differential gear, that's in the BC era, it just causes a total rewrite of history.
And there's another rewrite.
Oh, boy. Yeah. You know, others have commented, Rebecca, on how other reasons why we might see very advanced things, like, you know, brain surgery devices they found in ancient Sumeria, these things called trepanation devices. And they found skulls with perfectly round circles that are healed, so no, they were doing these type of medical procedures almost 5,000 years ago. And so, you know, Daniken and Sitchin and some of these guys came along and said, well, it must be ancient aliens. How else could man have gone from a hunter-gatherer to this high state of development? But then again, it went away. And so other people have come along and said, no, there was a catastrophe. People like Emanuel Velikovsky and others have said there must have been comets or meteors that hit the Earth. And our take on this is, you know, there probably are beings on planets around other stars. I don't doubt that they're aliens, but I don't give a lot of credence to them suddenly affecting civilization and then going away, because, you know, civilization declined. And there could well have been meteors and things that hit the Earth from time to time that interrupt. But, you know, you would see things come back 100 or 200 years later, that sort of thing. And so we really do lean more towards this cyclical theory, the great year that the Earth is slowly affected, just as all these ancient cultures said by our movement around another star, and it's, you know, causes us eventually to go to a golden age and back to a dark age and up again. And fortunately, now we're in the ascending age with the cycle bottoming out about 1,500 years or so ago, and things seem to be on the uprise once again.
Well, it can't come too soon for me, Walter. Not that I remember actually living 1,500 years ago, but, you know, there it is. It's, you know, certainly it's to the benefit of mankind if these theories prove out to be accurate, which, you know, once you read your book and once you look at the DVD and once you get all the facts and you put them all together, along with all the research that everyone has done, it makes just total perfect sense with a lot of things that's going on in the earth today and the things that we're finding from the past that's being unearthed, if you will, or being certainly brought to the surface so that we can take a look at it. I don't know, I think probably three times during this show today, we've talked about that history needs to be rewritten because of the new information that we're getting.
And so, it's coming out every day. I was just on the internet yesterday. I keep a running Google search on words like ancient and prehistoric and artifact and stuff like this. And they found in Iran, in the burnt city, this dates to about 5,000 years ago, some chambers had collapsed, and so they were virtually airtight, and so they found a number of fabrics in there, and fabrics are something that you usually don't find that are very old because they just don't last.
Right.
And they found massive quantities of all these beautiful colors and patterns and jewelry. And what they're realizing is, you know, our view of people going around in bearskins or, you know, very drab colors, you know, that's pretty much a Dark Age view. But if you go back thousands of years before the Dark Age, people were as sophisticated in their fashion as they are today. So anybody that wants to do a search on that, just go to ancient fashion discoveries, and there's a number of websites that have just come up on this particular subject.
Excellent. I'm actually going to go check that out when we get off the air here today. But before we run out of time, Walter, how can people get a hold of your book, your DVD, and or, you know, write you or whatever the case may be?
Sure. The book is at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Borders. Probably Amazon's the easiest way to get it, and you can just do a search for Lost Star of Myth and Time. Or people can come to our website, which is simply www.loststarbook.com, and that'll kind of take them to where they could get the book or get the DVD or find out more about it. And if there's any physicists that are tuning in and they're interested in sort of the hardcore research, we do have a site just for that. That's called the BinaryResearchInstitute.org, and we really get into the details of the physics of the astronomical motions there.
And I'd be interested in hearing from any of them. Walter, thank you so much for sharing your time today with us.
It's a great pleasure, Rebecca. Thanks.
We will be having you back on soon.
Thanks very much.
All righty.
I'd like to thank my guests tonight for sharing their wonderful information and knowledge with us. And a special thanks goes out to you, the listeners. Now, you know, the guests I have on air are given the opportunity to share their viewpoints or ideas. Now you and I have the opportunity of choice in regards to those ideas or viewpoints. Be sure to check in next week for more enlightening educational talk and discoveries. This is Rebecca of Journeys with Rebecca. Until we meet again, where will your life's journey take you? Many blessings and good night.
Thank you. You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey. You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.